Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Earlier today, just today, Russia blew up a major dam located in Novokakhovka, causing significant civilians evacuations.
We can state unequivocally that we are talking about deliberate sabotage of the Kakhovka Dam by the Ukrainian side. The sabotage has potentially very serious consequences.
Thousands of people have been evacuated in Ukraine after an explosion damaged a critical dam in Russian-occupied Kherson region. Ukraine and Russia are blaming each other. We'll go to Kyiv for the latest. Plus, we look at growing calls in Australia from the Prime Minister on down for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to be finally freed from prison in London and not extradited to the United States.
We're making very clear what our position is on Mr. Assange's case. There is nothing to be served by his ongoing incarceration.
We'll speak to longtime Assange attorney Jen Robinson in London. But we begin in Atlanta, where the city council just approved new funding for Cop City despite hearing over 14 hours of public comment from residents opposed to the massive police training center.
But for many of us, the human rights violations from murdering Manuel Tortuguita Taran and charging dozens of people with RICO and domestic terrorism to the inhumane conditions of both Fulton and DeKalb County's jail, added with the moving goalpost of city officials related to the financial cost and benefit analysis, is exactly why we organized against it then and exactly why we organize against it now.
We'll speak to Reverend James Woodall, who testified at the city council, as well as Marlon Coutts, a member of the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, who just spent 4 days in jail after an armed SWAT team raided the headquarters of the bail fund, which has raised money for activists in jail for protesting Cop City. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Evacuation efforts are underway in southern Ukraine, where floodwaters are rising after a dam on the Dnipro River was breached overnight in the Russian-occupied Ukrainian town of Novokakhovka. The breach has created an additional humanitarian disaster in an area that's seen heavy fighting since Russia's invasion. Ukraine's government says floodwaters are threatening 80 towns and villages, as well as the city of Kherson, home to 300,000 people. The breach could also limit drinking water supplies across Kherson and Crimea. Ukrainian officials accuse Russia's military of deliberately sabotaging the dam, calling it an act of ecocide. Russian officials blamed Ukrainian artillery fire for the breach. The disaster has raised fears of a nuclear accident at Europe's largest nuclear power station, the 6-reactor Zaporizhzhia plant, which is upstream of the dam breach. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, said earlier today the plant relies on a reservoir formed by the dam for critical cooling systems at the nuclear plant.
Absence of cooling water in the essential water systems for an extended period of time would cause fuel melt and inoperability of the emergency diesel generators. However, our current assessment is that there is no immediate risk to the safety of the plant. We are following this by the minute, as you can imagine.
The dam breach came as Russia's military said it had repelled a major offensive by Ukrainian forces in the Russian-occupied Donetsk region. It's believed to be the start of a long-anticipated counteroffensive by Ukraine's army. We'll have more on the dam crisis in Ukraine later in the broadcast. In Haiti, at least 42 people have died. Dozens more have been injured. Over 13,000 people have been forced from their homes after a weekend of nonstop rain caused rivers to overtop their banks, triggering flash floods and landslides. Even before the flooding, the UN reported more than 5 million Haitians, or nearly half the population, were in need of humanitarian assistance. In eastern Canada, firefighters have contained a massive wildfire that's driven thousands of people from their homes in Nova Scotia and triggered air quality alerts as far south as the U.S. state of Virginia. Another major fire in southwestern Nova Scotia continues to burn out of control. On Monday, the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration reported the past year saw one of the largest surges of carbon dioxide levels on record, bringing atmospheric levels of the heat-trapping gas to 424 parts per million. That's 50% higher than levels at the start of the Industrial Revolution and the highest level of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere in over 4 million years. China's accused the United States of provocative and dangerous actions after U.S. and Chinese warships came into close contact in the Taiwan Strait. Video of Saturday's incident released by the Pentagon shows a Chinese warship coming within 150 yards of a U.S. destroyer. This comes just days after the Pentagon said a Chinese fighter jet cut across the path of a U.S. spy plane as it flew over the South China Sea. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson defended the maneuvers.
I want to emphasize that the truth is the U.S. side stirred up troubles and made provocations first, while the Chinese side dealt with this in accordance with corresponding laws and regulations. China always respects the freedoms of navigation and overflight enjoyed by all countries under international law.
Meanwhile, U.S. lawmakers have invited Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to address a joint session of Congress later this month. The invitation came as U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with his Indian counterpart in New Delhi, pressing cooperation with India in the face of the growing military tensions between the United States and China.
Today, the U.S.-India partnership is a cornerstone of a free and open Indo-Pacific. And our deepening bonds show how technological innovation and growing military cooperation between two great powers can be a force for global good.
In the Israeli-occupied West Bank, a two-year-old Palestinian toddler has died after Israeli soldiers shot him in the head last week while he and his father sat in a car outside their home in Nabi Saleh. Israeli forces stormed the residential neighborhood and started firing indiscriminately, hitting Mohammed Tamimi and his father, who was also seriously wounded. Tamimi succumbed to his wounds Monday, 4 days after being put on life support. Relatives are demanding justice. This is his uncle.
When he was born, he stayed 30 days in the incubator. But after he grew up a bit and started walking and started to be active, he stole our hearts. Mohammed is a social child with a strong, loving personality. He would approach anybody. He captured our hearts, and sadly, this broke our hearts.
At least 27 children have been killed by Israeli soldiers this year, according to Defense for Children International Palestine. The group said in a statement, quote, unlawful killings of Palestinian children have become the norm as Israeli forces become increasingly empowered to use intentional lethal force in situations that are not justified. This is a war crime with no consequence, they said. In related news, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has vowed the United States will play an integral role in helping formalize diplomatic relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Blinken spoke Monday at a conference of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, where he told the crowd Washington has a national security interest in brokering ties between the two countries. Blinken is scheduled to travel to Saudi Arabia later this week. In Georgia, Atlanta City Council has voted in favor of funding the Atlanta Public Safety Training Center, a massive police training facility known as Cop City. The City Council's 11-4 vote capped a marathon session that began early Monday afternoon and lasted until 5:30 this morning. Activists opposed to Cop City packed the Atlanta City Hall and took turns denouncing the $67 million project during 14 hours of public comment. After headlines, we'll go to Atlanta for the latest. Missouri officials are moving forward with the execution of 42-year-old Michael Tisius today, despite pleas from human rights groups and even former jurors in his case to spare his life. The Supreme Court Monday denied a stay while Republican Governor Mike Parson refused to grant Tisius clemency. He was convicted of killing two jail guards when he was 19 years old. Six jurors, including two alternates, recently came out in support of commuting Tisius' sentence to life in prison. His clemency petition described the horrific violence and neglect he endured as a child, which had detrimental impacts on his neurological and mental health. In 2000, Tisius was sent to jail over a probation violation, where his cellmate convinced Tisius to help him escape, leading to the death of the two guards. Oklahoma officials have approved an application by the state's Catholic Archdiocese to establish the first publicly funded religious charter school in the United States. Monday's 3-2 vote by the Oklahoma statewide virtual charter school board came over the objections of Oklahoma's Republican Attorney General, who said it clearly violates the state's constitution. Catholic Church officials in Oklahoma are hoping that any legal fight over the charter school will reach the U.S. Supreme Court, whose conservative 6-3 majority has recently overturned decades of precedent on the separation of church and state. Federal prosecutors probing former President Trump's mishandling of classified documents have issued a subpoena seeking information about Trump's overseas business dealings during his time in office. Special Counsel Jack Smith is focused on the Trump Organization's real estate licensing and development deals in China, France, Kuwait, Oman, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates since 2017. On Monday, the group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington reported Trump made over $82 million from his businesses in Ireland and Scotland while serving as president. Meanwhile, NBC News reports prosecutors have convened a separate federal grand jury in Florida to hear evidence in Jack Smith's investigation into Trump's mishandling of documents. Author, civil rights activist, and professor of philosophy Cornel West has announced he's running for president as a candidate with the People's Party. In a short video released Monday, West said his campaign will focus on ending poverty, mass incarceration, wars, and ecological collapse, while guaranteeing housing, health care, education, and living wages for all.
I have decided to run for truth and justice, which takes the form of running for president of the United States as a candidate for the People's Party. I enter in the quest for truth. I enter in the quest for justice. And the presidency is just one vehicle to pursue that truth and justice, what I've been trying to do all of my life.
And in Brazil, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has unveiled a plan to end deforestation in the Amazon by 2030. Lula and Brazil's Environment Minister Marina Silva made the announcement Monday as part of their efforts to combat climate change. This is Lula speaking from the capital, Brasilia.
Brazil.
Mainly because of the Amazon rainforest, Brazil is largely responsible for the world's climate balance. That is why stopping deforestation in the Amazon is also a way to reduce global warming. I know the size of the challenge of ending deforestation by 2030, but this is a challenge we are determined to achieve.
Lula's remarks came as loved ones marked 1 year since the murder of the Brazilian indigenous researcher Bruno Pereira and British journalist Dom Phillips, who were shot dead in a remote area of the Brazilian Amazon last June while investigating threats to the rainforest and isolated indigenous tribes. Several suspects in the case remain jailed awaiting trial, including the alleged mastermind who's believed to be the leader of an illegal fishing criminal organization in the region. Dom Phillips' wife, Alessandra Sampaio, said they've continued to receive threats.
We have received death threats via letters and telephone. When is it going to stop? When is it going to stop? The death of Dom and Bruno was not enough? We are at a point where we can no longer ignore the issue of violence in the Amazon. It is very important that we become more vigilant.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined in Chicago by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we begin today's show in Atlanta, Georgia, where residents shattered the record for turnout at a city council meeting Monday, as thousands lined up to voice their opposition to the construction of a massive police training facility known as Cop City. Police enforced enhanced security as people signed up to participate in a public comment session ahead of a vote to approve $30 million in additional funding for Cop City, bringing the total to $67 million, more than double the original estimate. It would be the largest police training facility in the country. This comes after an Atlanta police SWAT team, guns drawn, raided the Atlanta Solidarity Fund last Wednesday and arrested three people who'd been raising money to bail out protesters opposed to Cop City, charging them with money laundering and charity fraud. Georgia Democratic Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock criticized the arrests in a statement Sunday, saying, quote, "While we still don't have all the details, as a pastor who's long been engaged in justice work, I'm concerned by what we know about last Wednesday's show of force against the organizers of an Atlanta bail fund and the questions it raises," he said. Those arrests come as 42 protesters face charges, including domestic terrorism, for opposing Cop City, and after Atlanta police shot dead the environmental activist Manuel Tortuguita Terán in January. An autopsy shows they were sitting with their hands raised up in front of their body when police shot them 57 times. This is Muskegee Indigenous leader Neko Chabon addressing the Atlanta City Council on Monday.
I am a part of the Methodist structure. I have been a part of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. I have been with conversations of human rights all across the world. I have walked with refugee camps in other parts and other nations of Indigenous peoples. I've seen situations just like what we're going through here in other countries. I've seen things going on where people have been killed, just like what we're trying to say should never happen here, all over the world, and I don't want that to increase. Every time in these countries, I shared with them, no matter what, how you slice it, the increasing of more militarized mechanism never establishes a peaceful society. No matter what, it never accomplishes what your hopes, what your arguments are. In fact, it does quite the opposite. In fact, our community, we are already living through the living proof of that at this moment. Today, I think it's obvious. I don't support Cop City.
Monday's Atlanta City Council meeting started in the afternoon and continued for nearly 15 hours until about 5 a.m. this morning. At one point, protesters broke out in song as public comment continued.
Recess has expired. Recess has expired. Recess has expired.
Ultimately, at about 5:30 this morning, the Atlanta City Council voted 11-4 to fund the Cop City facility. For more, we go to Atlanta for an update. Marlon Counts is with us, an organizer with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, who was one of the three people arrested last Wednesday and just spent 4 days in jail. Also with us, one of the first to speak during Monday's public comment session, Reverend James Woodall. He's a public policy associate at the Southern Center for Human Rights and co-author of Wired for Racism, How Evolution and Faith Challenge Racial Idolatry. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Reverend Woodall, let's begin with you. When you arrived at the Atlanta City Hall to give your public comment, can you talk about the different level of security and protocol to enter the premises that you'd ever experienced before? Just describe the scene for us and then what you said.
Most definitely. Well, first, let me start by saying thank you for having us on the show today. And when we entered Atlanta City Hall, we were met with bomb dogs. We were met with officers donning AR-15s. We had folks in riot gear. We saw a heightened level of security, both in protocol, meaning when we entered into the City Hall, we couldn't even bring in food or water. And people were planning to be there literally all day and all night. And to not even be able to bring in Gatorade, I had to throw my Gatorade out and had to walk out of the City Hall, throw it out, and come back in. And you know, it took a miracle, essentially, to be able to even bring pizza in towards the latter portions of the afternoon and into the evening. And we saw law enforcement officers really on every single level of the City Hall in the inside of the atrium. And so I had never seen that kind of activity in which our law enforcement response would essentially, criminalize in some ways what we were trying to do, which was to lift up the voice of the people.
And Reverend, I wanted to ask you, the mayor of Atlanta has claimed that much of the opposition is from outside agitators and a white movement. Could you talk about your own history in Atlanta and why you got involved in this movement?
Oh, for sure. I'm a sixth generation Atlantan. In fact, my grandmother's granddad, his dad, purchased property in the heart of the west end of Atlanta off of Finley Avenue for essentially $83 without a mortgage. And so our family has been in the heart of Atlanta for almost a century. And so, and I'm talking before the Emancipation Proclamation, and several dozens and hundreds of other people. In fact, almost every single person that we saw and heard from last night and yesterday afternoon was from Atlanta. Now, granted, there are people who are not from Atlanta as well, but who cares? Because at the end of the day, what we're fighting for is liberty and justice for all, which they pledged their allegiance to for the flag of this yet-to-be United States. And so if there's injustice anywhere, there's a threat to justice everywhere. And unfortunately, again, democracy has failed us, because that is just simply not the case. And so when I think about what the mayor said, in fact, I'll even tell you, is that the mayor's mother taught my grandmother how to do hair, which taught my mom how to do hair. And so when I think about how I got involved in this work, and I'm seeing what's happening on the ground each and every day inside of our facilities, I'm seeing, you know, children and college students pulled out of cars and being tagged and laser, I mean, not laser tagged, essentially targeted for being at the wrong place at the wrong time. I'm seeing people die, literally die at the hands of law enforcement, both here in the city of Atlanta and surrounding these counties and these communities. Because this is not just about the city of Atlanta. We're going to see departments and agencies all over this nation send its people, send its law enforcement and first responders here to train on urban warfare. And what we saw last Wednesday, what we've seen over the course of the last few months as relates to domestic terrorism charges is concerning and is exactly the kind of reason why we stand in complete opposition to this project.
And this was a marathon meeting of the Atlanta City Council. Your response to the outcome and the vote, and did you get a sense that any members of the City Council were moved at all by the testimony?
Well, what I'll tell you is that is a example and is indicative that our democracy has died. And the spirit of democracy has died because when the people show up, and you see both parties, this isn't a red versus blue, Democrat versus Republican kind of issue. We saw Republicans come out in opposition. We saw Libertarians come out in opposition. You saw Democrats come out in opposition. You saw people who are not affiliated with any of the above come out in opposition. And when you see elected officials choose the side, not of the people, right, not of justice and liberty for all, but when you see elected officials take the side of corporate executives and nonprofit leaders who seek to profit off of taxpayer dollars, right? What we should be talking about is charity fraud on behalf of the Atlantic Public Foundation because of what we've seen them do and how the numbers have just not added up. And so I'm concerned that our democracy is dead because our elected officials are not representing the people, regardless of who they vote for.
I wanted to bring in Marlon Coutts into the conversation with Reverend James Woodall. Marlon is with the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, one of the three people arrested on Wednesday. This was just days before this critical Atlanta City Council vote, where they voted to approve what's now more than double the amount originally proposed for this police facility. Marlon, if you can talk about, I mean, how unusual the level of force used was in this raid on the Atlanta fund, which not only has helped people who've been arrested around the cop city, but you do this around for many people who have been arrested.
Absolutely. Yeah, in terms of the raid, it was terrifying, obviously. And you'll have to forgive my voice. I'm still feeling the effects of the better half of a week in the DeKalb County jail. But, you know, we woke up to the sound of our door being broken down by a battering ram and our house being surrounded by dozens of SWAT officers. And my first reaction was that this has to be a mistake. You know, naively, I thought this wasn't the kind of thing that could happen to organizers like us. But once I saw the automatic weapons, the body armor, and I heard police discussing throwing a flashbang into our living room, I realized that these police had come prepared to kill us in the same way that police have come prepared to kill activists protesting in the forest and, in fact, did kill Manuel Tortuguita Terán. And, you know, so we quickly surrendered. We were arrested in our pajamas and taken to jail. So the experience was terrifying on two different levels, in this immediate way of what it was like to face that kind of police violence for doing nothing more than, you know, nonviolent work to support the rights of protesters. But also on this higher level of what it means, right? Because if this kind of police violence can be brought, even against organizers like us who do nothing more than make sure that activists have access to lawyers, who make sure that they're able to make bail if they can't afford it themselves, if this kind of violence can be brought against people like us, who is safe in this city? And what does that mean for the right to protest and democracy?
And Marlon, what happened at your bail hearing on Friday? What was the judge's response to your arrest and the charges against the three of you?
Yeah, I mean, after days in jail, we finally got in front of a judge who confronted the allegations against us, the arrest warrants. And the judge very quickly acknowledged that the charges are baseless. They're nonsensical. We're being charged with charities fraud and money laundering. And you know, the activities of our organization are completely legal. They're transparent. They're above board. We very carefully follow all laws and regulations related to our work because we know that we are in the crosshairs of many political forces. And the judge recognized this and fortunately issued us bail, which has been unusual in these protest cases, which are usually denied bail flat out. And I think this shows that the efforts of prosecutors to demonize organizers associated with the movement against Cop City are beginning to be exposed. They're beginning to become unraveled and shown to be what they are, which is malicious political prosecutions that have nothing to do with enforcing the law, keeping the public safe. What they really have to do with is bringing the force and violence of police and prosecutors to suppress a political movement, to suppress political speech.
As we begin to wrap up, I wanted to ask Reverend James Woodall, You're deeply concerned about issues of police brutality and abuse of power. This is a police training facility. Now you have Senator Warnock also weighing in, deeply concerned about the raid on the Atlanta Solidarity Fund with weapons drawn by a SWAT team. But if you can comment on why you are concerned about a police training facility, isn't that what you would want, police to be trained better?
Is exactly what I don't want, because when we think about police training, we're not talking about police training. We're talking about an infrastructure project. We have yet to talk about what they're being trained to do. In fact,